Hello, and welcome to the FPS podcast series. This is podcast number 36, and it's a continuation of the Russian sanctions brought to you by Federal Publication Seminars and Barnes & Thornburg. And my name is Todd Hatherley, and I'm the Director of Programming for Federal Publication Seminars, and we're a leader in federal government contract training professional development for the past 60 years. And every year, we train thousands of businesses, federal agencies, and individuals on legal, regulatory, compliance, and accounting nuances found in the federal regulations through nationwide classroom, online, in-house sessions. These podcasts are really just a small sampling of important content you, as a contracting professional, can expect from attending an FPS program, whether you're in person or on live or on demand. You cannot find another source with breadth and depth of experience, knowledge, and content anywhere. So please visit us at fedpubseminars.com for more information. And today I'm joined by colleagues from the law firm Barnes & Thornburg. They are Kristen Kirschmorthy, Clinton Yu, and Teresa Youngblood. How are you today?
We're good. Thank you.
Great. Glad to have you. Now we're going to talk again, second session on Russian sanctions. There have been some updates, and you're providing us with those updates and a little bit about some of the compliance challenges that we're facing. So let's start off. Kristen, why don't you kick the whole thing off?
Yeah, great. So just to start off with, we have a brief legal disclaimer. Information provided in this podcast should not be construed as legal analysis, advice, or opinion. Please direct any questions you have about specific legal issues to your attorney for further consideration. So with that in mind, I just wanted to start off with a quick recap of what we discussed in our last podcast, which sort of had all the information that was current as of the beginning of March. In our last podcast, we discussed the foreign direct product rule that has been applied to Russia, new restrictions on military end users in Russia, sanctions on financial institutions, also sanctions on individuals, individuals like Russian President Vladimir Putin, as well as his foreign minister Lavrov. And then we also discussed in detail what those sanctions mean for U.S. business in Russia, U.S. exports to Russia, and how U.S. companies can get paid for existing transactions while avoiding doing business with sanctioned Russian banks. So with that in mind, Clinton, do you want to provide a quick summary of what today's topics are going to be?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Kristen, for that recap. And, you know, since the last podcast, which was the 1st of March, Russia's invasion of Ukraine has not relented. And as a result, we've seen ratcheting up of not only export controls and sanctions against Russia, Belarus, but also restrictions imposed on imports into the United States on certain Russian goods. And so we'll spend the first half of the podcast discussing those. And then in the past 2.5 weeks, we've gotten a lot of questions from clients and a lot of them overlap. And so we thought it'd be helpful to share with this audience some of these sort of common questions and general commentary we have for that. So with that being said, I think we could kick it off into the recent updates on exports and sanctions. And I don't know, Teresa, you want to take that one?
Sure, Clinton. Thank you so much. As Clinton mentioned, there have been a flurry of recent developments that basically support and enhance the sanctions that were and restrictions that were placed on Russia, to include expanding that to the country of Belarus and the exports, re-exports, and transfers to that country. U.S. government, as well as other governments, have decided that their participation in the invasion of Ukraine by the Russian government has been facilitated by Belarus. And so the U.S. government has issued additional sanctions on Belarus that really basically mirror quite a bit of the sanctions or restrictions and export licensing requirements on U.S. goods, technology, and services to Belarus. So in addition to the Russian sanctions, the Belarus has also been restricted with regard to U.S. exports, re-exports, and transfers. In addition, there have been, and that was effective March the 3rd, and several of them have been already implemented and been effective March 3rd of those restrictions. So additional ones have to do with the oil and gas industry. We know that President Biden had issued a restriction on imports of oil and gas, but also exports, additional restrictions on exports to the oil and gas industry in Russia, as well as in Belarus as well. And so some of the most innocuous oil and gas type of commodities that are intended for the Russian oil and gas industry have been restricted as well. And then, of course, something that most people do not think about necessarily in terms of exports are, you know, luxury goods or so-called luxury goods and the ban on those types of goods. Some of the most non-luxury type goods you could sort of imagine, for example, tobacco, some racket strings, tracksuits, obviously more luxury goods like furs and silks, and even just carpets. And so when you're evaluating, companies are evaluating their exports and evaluating their supply chain and evaluating their customer base, evaluating obviously the goods is extremely important that previously maybe most companies had not gotten caught up in such export restrictions. But given the wide breadth of these types of goods that are being restricted, it's important to really focus on where those items are going and the type of items that you're intending to export. And with that, what must be exported oftentimes are imported. And so imports are absolutely also impacted by these restrictions. And so let's turn it over to Kristen so she can talk about imports into the U.S. as well as restrictions on investments when it relates to Russia.
Yeah, and before we do that, hey, Teresa, I actually have a question for you. That's something that's come up maybe with other clients. You mentioned luxury goods. I mean, when I think of luxury goods, I think of these, you know, high-end purses and clothing and all that. So does that mean it's, you know, it's only the expensive stuff going out that's restricted? How broad is this?
Not at all. And I think, you know, the U.S. government obviously tracks what exports are going to Russia, to Belarus, et cetera. And so through U.S. government computers and through U.S. government software. So they understand some of the pain points and when it comes to commodities that are intended for export to Russia. So they're doing those evaluations. What's going to, from a sanctions standpoint, what's really going to hurt the most? It's not always luxury goods to Russia. We're talking about makeup preparations, for example, beauty and skincare preparations, nicotine, handbags. And yes, the more sort of luxurious kinds of furs and silks and things of that nature. Textile carpets wouldn't necessarily be considered next luxury goods, but absolutely. And so what U.S. companies have to be careful of is understanding, classifying their products, which Kristen will talk about a little bit later in terms of due diligence, classifying their products and understanding how those products are controlled for export. And oftentimes there is trade data that you necessarily have to put into your export documentations. For example, your schedule, what are called Schedule B numbers, the U.S. government issues in accordance with what those commodities are. So examining what those Schedule B numbers are, companies have to be very, very careful about what those Schedule B numbers are. And those exactly may hit on these so-called quote-unquote luxury goods that may or may not be considered in most vernacular luxury goods, tents, backpacking tents, for example, although I'd love to go backpacking right about now, but camping types of things, footwear, et cetera. Those are types of things that we're talking about, quote-unquote luxury, but some not necessarily luxurious goods.
Thank you, Teresa.
Thanks.
Yeah, so let Kristen take it from here on the import side now.
Yep, as Teresa mentioned, what goes out must come in. We also have new import restrictions as well as some restrictions on investment in Russia. So one of the first sort of import-related issues you might have heard about in the news lately is the revocation of Russia's MFN status. So MFN is an acronym. It stands for Most Favored Nation. And it's basically the primary benefit of membership in the World Trade Organization. So when a country joins the WTO, they get MFN status in all other WTO member countries. And that basically means that they're paying far less money in tariffs on almost all of their products than a non-WTO member state. So this change actually hasn't been implemented yet. It's going to require congressional action. But President Biden signified his support for it, and it has broad bipartisan support in Congress. So we do think that we will see legislation moving forward relatively soon. To suspend Russia's MFN status. And the reason why the Western countries can suspend Russia's MFN status, it's not that they're kicking Russia out of the WTO. Russia will remain a member state. But in the WTO agreements, there's an exception to MFN status if it's needed for national security reasons. And that's sort of what the Western countries have invoked, this national security exception, as justification for why they can strip Russia of MFN status. And if that were to pass Congress and go into effect, you would see a significant increase on tariffs on almost all Russian imports into the United States. As Teresa mentioned before, we also have a new import ban on Russian oil and gas. That's certainly been dominating the headlines lately. And then in addition to oil and gas, there are also several other sectors that have been affected by import bans. Last Friday, President Biden signed an executive order banning imports of seafood, vodka, and diamonds, which also make up a significant chunk of Russian imports into the United States. And finally, we have our potential new restrictions on American investment in Russia. There was an executive order also signed last Friday that authorized the Treasury Department to ban any new investment in any sector of the Russian economy. The Treasury still needs to sort of decide on how they're going to do this and issue maybe some implementing regulations. It hasn't gone into effect yet, but they now have the authority from the president to ban all new American investment in the Russian economy. So that's sort of a quick overview, summary of import restrictions and investment restrictions. And with that in mind, Clinton, I thought that we could pivot a little bit and talk about some of the compliance challenges facing U.S. businesses, both in Russia and around the world. So what are some good resources to use as a compliance professional to keep up to date with this constant flurry of changes?
There is no one right answer. Certainly, Google is your friend, but also could be your enemy in this effort to stay compliant because there's just so much information out there, so much news. I think the other day I saw news saying that Russia is now the most sanctioned nation by the U.S., right? And I thought about that and I thought, you know, yes, there have been sweeping export controls and sanctions imposed against Russia, but they're technically not subject to a complete embargo, like countries such as Iran, Syria, North Korea, Cuba. So to some extent, yes, maybe the financial impact is of course, huge, but just reading the headline of a news saying it's the most sanctioned nation may not be the proper understanding, at least from a compliance professional's perspective. What I like to do is tell folks, you know, go straight to the source. Go look up the White House executive order. Look at that language. And then from there, the agencies have to implement the executive order. So what are the agencies? On the sanctions side, you go to OFAC. It's Department of Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control. They have a website with FAQs, with guidance for complying specifically with these sanctions and general licenses that describe perhaps what may be exempt. Similarly, you have the Department of Commerce, they have the Bureau of Industry and Security, they impose the export controls. And likewise, they also have FAQs, they have a lot of guidance on the export controls there. So go straight to the sources, my general advice to clients. And of course, if you don't, it is quite difficult sometimes to understand what the government is saying. So of course, folks like us, we're here to help as well. I guess with those resources, I mean, we've had clients come to us as well with requests from vendors and customers to sign various letters, like compliance certifications or compliance declarations. Teresa, have you seen any of these kind of letters come across? And what's been your general advice to the clients for this kind of request?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. We've seen a flurry of activity, obviously, on the government side. And as a result, companies really want to comply, but where to start, right? And oftentimes, you will see a trigger from a company's supplier base and or their customer base with these certifications, many of which, you know, it's not the first that I've seen, because most companies have good compliance programs in various stages of maturity. And as Clinton mentioned, we're more than happy to help anyone who comes for assistance with regard to these sanctions or any international trade issues they may have. But yes, sometimes that often will trigger, what do we do? We have this language, or what do we do? Compare it to our contract language for government contractors, for example. Are they working with their government contract managers? Have they been flowing down specific changes to their terms and conditions as it relates to the contracts? Are they getting that guidance? And so it's important that that relationship is strong and that you can go to your government contract manager and ask these questions and make sure that you are complying with the terms and conditions of your contract. But you do see the one-off sort of end user certifications that your customer may be providing to you. So make sure that you're examining those and that you're flowing those down to your supply base, and making sure that you are working with your customer salespeople, making sure that they understand what the limitations are. And if, for example, your customer may not be the end user, it's important that you understand who that end user is, and at the minimum, due diligence is exercised with these types of end user certifications that address the Belarus sanctions, the Russian sanctions. And oftentimes, companies will have some existing due diligence programs, knowing who your customer is, but supplementing these certifications with to address the Russian sanctions, both financial sanctions that are affecting these Russian entities, the Belarus entities, Crimea, et cetera. So yeah, we've seen quite a bit of these certification letters, and we've seen those flows to various companies from their customers about making sure that they're in compliance. So it's important to examine those with your legal counsel, outside or in-house counsel, and that terms of those industry certifications are up to date. It is highly recommended that those are implemented, developed and implemented and vetted. But yeah, and as we've said, we've focused a lot on U.S. export controls and sanctions and how these incredibly dense and effective and broad sanctions are applying to U.S. exporters or to U.S. companies, but they're pretty global. One of the things that is very, very clear, a lot of countries are aligned with making sure that the Russian government understands that this invasion was not supported by most of the countries around the world. And so the EU in particular have implemented various sanctions, and U.S. export controls have adapted to that and understand and appreciate that other countries have been as forthright in their sanction policy. And so if you're operating on a global basis, you do need to pay attention to how U.S. government sanctions applies, export controls applies, as well as other non-U.S. government sanctions policies applies to your exports and financial transactions, et cetera. But waiting for sort of the Federal Register notices to come out is really important, but it's also important to be very proactive and as compliance professionals to get ahead of the game. And so, Kristen, why don't you tell us a little bit more about how some compliance professionals really kind of can be a little bit proactive about confronting the challenges posed by these Russian sanctions and export controls restrictions that have been applied to, and sort of supplement what we hope are good existing compliance programs?
Of course, yeah. I think that a lot of what you can do to be proactive about avoiding these sanctions or complying with these sanctions and export controls, it's a lot of what companies should have been doing before as part of their compliance program. But it's even more important now to be extra cautious and to be exhibiting extra due diligence in your transactions. So the first thing that comes to mind is your export classifications, making sure that they are accurate, making sure that they are up to date. And then not just your export classifications, but also your HTS analysis and your customs compliance analysis. As Teresa mentioned, the luxury goods ban, it can include a lot of products that you don't necessarily think of off the top of your head as being luxury goods. And so making sure that your goods are classified properly under the HTS, that's going to make sure that you are complying with the luxury goods ban as well. In addition, your screening procedures, I mean, I know that compliance professionals are always hammering this home, but make sure that your screening procedures are up to date, make sure that they're airtight, make sure that you are conducting screenings appropriately. And then just in general, this is not something that only affects people who are doing business in Russia and in Eastern Europe, of course, because you also have to be very cautious about transshipment, no matter where in the world you are doing business. I know that there's a high chance that Russian companies may try to get around these sanctions by doing business in third-party countries, particularly China, but other countries as well. So no matter where in the world you're doing business, you want to be cautious about transshipment. You want to exercise due diligence. Be careful. Ask questions. Be particularly careful with government customers. Don't be afraid to address them with specific questions about the scope of the transaction. Don't be afraid to ask about Russia and Russian sanctions in particular. Make sure that you're really understanding your supply chain, your transaction, and who all is involved, no matter where in the world you're doing business. And so I think we're coming up on our time. Todd, did you have any sort of closing remarks?
Thank you for joining us, and all three of you, Teresa and Clinton and Kristen. If anybody from our audience would like to get a hold of the Barnes and Thornburg group, how would they do that, Kristen?
I'll take
Teresa.
That.
I'm sorry, Teresa.
Yeah, that's okay. I'll take that. Todd, that's all right. Oh, that good, Kristen knows as well. You can always go to, obviously, to our website. It's www.btlaw.com, or follow us on Twitter at btlawtrade, or you can email me directly, and Clinton can give you his email address and Kristen's email address. Mine is Teresa, Teresa.Youngblood, Youngblood, at btlaw.com. I'll turn it over to Clinton for his email address.
Actually, I like phone calls, so you can give me a call at 202-371-6376.
And my email address is Kristen, K-R-I-S-T-E-N, Krishnamurthy, K-R-I-S-H-N-A-M-U-R-T-H-Y at btlaw.com. And I know that last name is a bit difficult to spell, so it is on our website as well.
Excellent. Just also for our audience, you all teach courses for us, including the ITAR course, International Traffic and Arms Regulations.
We do.
Both advanced and basic. And we got some coming up, both classroom virtually as well. And we hope to see all of you in our classes. Export Administration Regulations, also known as EAR, and the Office of Foreign Asset Control Regulations, so EAR OFAC, is also another course. You have been teaching for federal publication seminars many, many years, and we hope to see you in our classroom. And I know the Barnes and Thornburg folks would love to see you in the classroom as well. And they do an excellent job. And like I said, for many years, been doing that class with us. So we appreciate that. And as always, if you have topics you want us to cover in a podcast, please send me a note at todd@fedpubseminars.com. And until next time, stay safe, keep your distance, and read the FAR. Thank you, everyone.